When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
Welcome back to another episode of Crossover. I'm Rohan Nadkarni, joined today by Sports Illustrated senior writer, author of the book Blood in the Garden. In Dior, they call him Mr. Herring. Chris Herring is on the show. Chris, how's it going, buddy?
Once again, I'm like, I'm good. Let me just put it that way. I'm good. You always, like, how you in 10 seconds each time manage to, like, just kind of flip me, turn me, just in a way where I'm like, I don't know what he's referencing here.
We're trying to get each other out of our comfort zone on this podcast. You know what I mean?
Oh, man.
It was a little baby who said, in Dior, they call me Mr. Baby. And I was like, that's a bar.
That's why, man. I'm just now really, I'm sitting here trying to like expand my music palette. I've listened to It's Almost Dry, the Pusha T album.
There we go.
And everything else. I'm just now catching up on that. I'm about to watch Creed 3 this week and all these other culturally like pop culture things. You got to give me some time, man. You can't be throwing one after another at me. I hate that.
I had the oldest moment of my life this week, and I was walking into Whole Foods, and this high school kid is in the parking lot, and it's like 12:30 on a Friday or whatever, or a Monday, I guess. And I'm walking into Whole Foods, and this kid's like, excuse me, sir? Talking to me?
Yeah, probably.
Like, what? And I go over, and he was, and I was like, oh, my God. So he's like, he's doing a candy fundraiser. And then I asked the oldest question I've asked anyone in my entire life. And I was like, shouldn't you be in school?
Damn, are you a truancy officer?
I was like, and then I was like, immediately I was like, oh my God, I'm so old. I'm so sorry. And he's like, he's like, I'm actually a dual enrollment. And I was like,
well, at least you got your answer, nosy ass.
All I'm saying is the kid's doing a school fundraiser. Why is he not in school? Just, you know, making sure.
Rohan is worried about the children.
These kids are taking advantage of their education, brother. Oh, God. Chris, lots of stuff I want to get to on the show today. God, let's begin with a game I was so excited for last night. Nuggets, Sixers. Joel Embiid was, found out a few hours before the game, he's not going to play. Couple things. First, I want to say I thought Rob Mahoney wrote a great piece for the Ringer about the MVP conversation. That was really good. And like a lot of people, I think the smart people at the Ringer were probably like, let's run this the day Jokic and Embiid are playing against each other. Of course, Embiid sits out. The Nuggets end up winning. Jokic was phenomenal. He had a great game. But yeah, just I don't even know what I want to say about it. I mean, the Nuggets have been playing well recently, which was another reason I was really looking forward to this game. And I got to be honest, I was surprised. And I'm not, only because Embiid had played in a back-to-back earlier on this road trip, and I felt like he was someone who probably really wanted to, felt like he could have ended the MVP debate with one more big performance last night.
Last night, I mean, can I just be real in saying that last night was a little frustrating. Like, props to the Sixers for not prioritizing, or props to Embiid or whoever it would have been, their medical staff, for not rolling him out there. Like, if he's not good, the Sixers have been electric for the last however long. They've got a legitimate chance to compete for a title. The MVP is not the most important thing. I saw it on the schedule this week and was like, yes.
Yeah.
Like, help me make sense of this mess of an NBA MVP race. Surprised, and I think you had brought this up last week, or maybe Mannix did, we podcasted last week. Like, shame on the league for not, you know, for having like a random Monday night where,
yep.
You know, even if he had been healthy, that it was going to get played on NBA TV or whatever. Like, you know, I've appreciated that they've had it on ESPN and on national TV game and stuff like that. The last few times that they've had them play. But also shame on the fact that, you know, the Giannis matchup for Jokic is coming right before that. Spread the games out, put them on national TV. It was unfortunate that we didn't get to see the matchup. And it was like, it was kind of par for the course in the sense that Jokic plays, Jokic gets his triple double.
Yep.
The Nuggets look just good. You know, they played just well enough to win in a game that was not very impressive from them. Michael Malone said as much after the game was over. It was actually pretty encouraging.
Whoa. Was that a Mike Malone I heard? Easy, brother.
Michael Malone. Sorry. I don't want to get slapped up when, you know, if I interview him on the sideline. I mean, in all seriousness, in today's environment where people, you know, nicknames, whatever else, people want to be called what they want to be called. I'm all for it. And he had said that before. It was just weird that one time.
He looks like a Mike Malone. I'm going to say it. He looks like a Mike Malone.
He went by Mike Malone for so long that it's like, I think it was difficult for people to like, but he had made it known in some circles that he wanted Michael. Anyway, so it was an encouraging game from the Sixers, quite frankly, to watch without their guys, without Harden or Embiid. But I was looking forward to seeing like that matchup. Who knows if it even would have, like, I'm a firm believer that one game out of 82 should not make the difference. It just kind of sucks to just have the one game to go off of when obviously Embiid was dominant that day. And, you know, we'll see. I also want to say that I opened up my email today and saw one of the odds makers saying that Jokic had retaken the favorite position in the MVP race. And I'm like, all right, enough. Like, at this point, you know, Tim Bontemps texted me last night. I was just telling somebody that he texted for his straw poll yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Asking, like, what have you got? And I'm like, and I just ignored him for a couple hours. So I'm like, I don't have an answer. I gave him one. I wouldn't put any merit in it because, like, I don't know how I would vote at this moment. I know that's what that's meant to be, but I have no clue. And was hoping that that game would help clarify a little bit, or at least maybe momentarily do that. I think we all have basically the same top three, just in, you know, maybe different order. But even the 4 or 5 spots, it's been a weird year. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how it all shakes out. And I'm honestly looking forward to these last 2 weeks. They mean something from a seeding perspective. And I'm hoping that they help give us clarity in terms of the award stuff as well.
Yeah, especially in a year where the race is so tight. Like, I think it's okay to nitpick. And you, if someone has a great game, maybe you give them an edge. Like, again, I don't think the decision comes down to it, but you're looking at all data points at this point. I will say, as it regards to the Nuggets, yeah, I think they slept walk a little bit through that fourth quarter against Philly. They were dominant in the third quarter, and they were like, whatever. Their win against the Bucks was a nice win. Now, frustrating, because that also came on the second night of a back-to-back for Milwaukee, which means both Joker Giannis games this year were on back-to-backs. Neither was on national TV. Or maybe the first one was, but I think Giannis set it out anyway. Just very frustrating. But that was a fantastic game, and I think the Nuggets have had their two best wins this year. I think they had Memphis, held Grizzlies to like 92 points at home, one game. This game against Milwaukee, fantastic. You saw the Nuggets at their peak. They've now won 4 in a row, I think 5 out of their last 6 after a 4-game losing streak. So they seem to be stabilizing there. I think that they're starting to look kind of like the Denver team I expected again. It's going to be interesting to watch them certainly moving forward. I still think towards this back kind of stretch of the season, we're seeing teams, how they are really going to attack Denver defensively. And that means going at Jamal and Nikola. And something that's interesting to me, did you watch that Sixers Warriors game?
I did not. I did not.
So it was a fantastic game. And you don't need me to tell you that. Obviously, it was Embiid versus Steph. Great game. Embiid's like a plus 22. Steph's like a plus 10. Something that was fascinating about that game was, you know, the Sixers would go up big when Embiid would play. When Steph's not on the floor, the Warriors would come back when Steph played with Embiid wasn't on the floor. Embiid and Steph play like 8 minutes together in the fourth quarter where they're both on the floor. The Warriors score 28 points. I'm starting to come around to the idea that, like, if you're as big as Joker and Embiid, like, the stamina that's going to be required from those guys to do it on both ends of the floor in the playoffs, all four quarters, is going to be fascinating. Because they're, I think the teams that are smart, like, as good as Embiid is defensively, making him work for four quarters on that end of the floor, I thought the Warriors had a lot of success with that. That's an interesting subplot I just want to throw out there ahead of the playoffs.
Yeah, and it also speaks to the idea of having multiple bigs that you can throw out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, and even when you do, it might not be enough. We mm-hmm. saw the Celtics last year with Horford, certainly with Robert Williams, who, I mean, the guy can block shots from damn near the free mm-hmm. throw line when guys are pulling up from behind right. the three-point line. It gives you more of a chance, and obviously you need to have a ball-handling defensive guard a defensive guard who's covering ball handlers that can get mm-hmm. over screens well enough to be able to provide that threat while you're waiting for your big to get there or to be able to stick in mm-hmm. place on switches and what have you. So it's a handful for anybody to be able to play defense on those sorts of guards. And frankly, you've got a couple of them now. I don't think we're going to see Dame making a trip to the finals or anything like that, but he's obviously one of them. You've got a lot of quick trigger guys in the league, and it absolutely is something that's going to tire out the best defensive big men. Let alone someone like Jokic, who that was part of his responsibility last year and why it was such a tough matchup. Like, Joker's not going to be able to take that away. And also, if you're exhausting him from that standpoint, he's not going to have quite as much as he would have to give on offense either. So I hear you.
It's just the idea of, like, even Embiid, you know, because back in the day, at least, you think about that team, I think the best team he had, well, the year they lost on the Kawhi shot, he had Jimmy and prime Ben Simmons, I don't know what you want to call it, on the perimeter, like really good defenders on that team. And I'm just so fascinated with the idea of the Sixers are constructed a little bit differently now. I think there's a lot more pressure on Embiid. To be that number one guy for like 43 minutes in a playoff game is going to be very difficult. I'm just rambling here, but I want to get to what you wrote about in your newsletter today, the Playmaker. I thought this was a really smart newsletter. If you guys are not reading it, seriously, you should subscribe.
Thank you, man.
You know, we touched on the Mavs a little bit last week, but I really wanted to open up this discussion with you because I'm just genuinely curious to hear your opinion on it. You wrote about how the Mavs have struggled to find the right number two for Luka Doncic. Kyrie is just not working out, and I think anyone who disliked this trade, which was all of us, like, saw this coming from a mile away. It's not been Kyrie's fault, but they traded away players that they needed for what I feel is like a luxury. And I get it. You want two great individual scorers for a playoff series, but, you know, it's a team that basically has no great, good, even perimeter defenders. Like, they just don't have any perimeter defense. I think you wrote in your column, like, their offense has been a little bit better since they got Kyrie, but not markedly better. The defense has been just as bad. Like, it hasn't changed their team. It's a team that can't defend. They lost back-to-back games to the Hornets. That second Charlotte game that they lost in Charlotte, that's one of the most embarrassing losses by any team this season. Shout out to Charlotte, though. That looked like a fun atmosphere, and I'm glad those fans got that game. Actually, I want to start with this question.
Sure.
Don't you think the Mavs would be, like, sick if they had this year's version of Kristaps Porzingis on the team?
I mean, certainly I'm kind of hinted at that in my newsletter. And it, you know, in a veiled way was basically saying, like, one, what does the ideal second star for Luka look like? But also in going through the list of guys that they've slotted in that role, Brunson, who, you know, I think that they always felt like they could maybe do without, or certainly at his contract number that he wanted from New York and got from New York. you know, Kyrie is not working out, whether you feel like they deserve more of a chance to show it or not. I don't think anyone is expecting the defense part of that to turn around. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just wrote a piece last week on Porzingis, who he has not been perfect. He has not been totally, totally healthy, but he has not been problematically unhealthy or, you know, like injured and on the shelf for long stretches the way he generally is. He's, you know, career best effective field goal rate. 3-point shooting stuff is basically at a career best. He's been really, really good in the post. He's getting like a quarter of a point more than you would expect for each shot he's taking from the post this year.
Defending the rim like Brooke Lopez, like
11 percentage points that he's holding opponents under their averages this year, shooting the ball, you know, at the rim. That's all you can ask for. And it's all stuff that Dallas really needs aside from Luka. So it makes you wonder to some extent. Like, I remember thinking that too. Like, I understood that you wanted to be able to have more flexibility with the money you were giving to Porzingis. It's hard to move a contract that's worth $35 million or whatever he was making. I don't remember what it was at this point. It's easier to break that into two contracts or three contracts or whatever to move them and to trade them. Doesn't mean it's more talent on your roster. Dinwiddie is perfectly fine. He's a lesser version of Kyrie, quite frankly, you know, and maybe can do a little bit more aside from that, a little bit bigger, stuff like that. But like, I just don't know that it makes them like a fundamentally better team. And so would you take this year's Porzingis over the other stuff? Would you take that over Kyrie? Probably. I mean, at least you don't have a redundant skill set at that point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was absolutely part of what I was getting at. Is like, they need to find like a second guy for Luka at some point, whether it's now, off season, next year, at some point through the draft, at some point, whatever. But at a certain point, it's like, what gives you great hope that they're going to be able to do it? Because they had one guy that, granted, he might not have been an ideal second guy, but he worked. You got to the conference finals with him in Brunson, then you didn't pay him. Porzingis is a guy that, you know, you also could maybe look at the Washington situation and say, like, see, it's not working there.
Yeah.
With Beal, okay, I guess. But in theory, Porzingis should work really well with Luka. And if health was the reason you didn't feel good about that, was there something that the Mavs weren't doing? Was there something that the Knicks weren't doing that all of a sudden going forward, or like where Steph takes on a different workout and all of a sudden his ankles are good for the next 6 years, 7 years? Who knows? I don't know. I'm not saying that I do, is why I didn't hammer that point home as far as what the Mavericks were doing wrong, but they've struggled a little bit with identifying that. And it's like, that kind of does feel like the biggest question here to raise when it comes to Luka's stint there. And a stint, I don't mean to suggest he's leaving, but his time there of like, can you find the right person to pair with the heliocentric guard like him, who is otherworldly as far as a skill? Even yesterday, the game before that, he has periods where he's playing brutally, like just not really shooting well. You know, he's trying to find his own offense, and he can miss the first six shots, and then he makes four threes in a row on five possessions. And it's like, wow, the guy is just otherworldly. But what are you going to do with that if you're Dallas? And, you know, it's just, this is not a team that, even with him having missed some time this season, he hasn't missed so much time to where they should be potentially missing the plan. And now it's awkward because, like, even if they make it, they're then going to end up basically giving away a pick to the Knicks, which maybe they should want that more in light of the way the season has gone, because they don't have so many assets. So it's a totally weird situation. Like, what do you make of them and what they should do where they're at?
It's a bad situation if they don't make the play-in. Like, that is a disastrous season.
Yeah.
You can't sugarcoat it. It is crazy. You know, I brought up Porzingis only because, and I want to ask, like, what that player looks like. I thought that was a great trade at the time when they made it. I remember, you know, I was flying back from vacation and it was a huge deal. It was like, why are the Knicks giving up on Porzingis even after the ACL tear? Mm-hmm. The idea that no one's going to sign him in the summer is ludicrous. They had fantastic pick and roll chemistry. The stats were off the charts. You mentioned the health. I think there were also rumors of, like, I don't think it was the best personality fit. And, you know, I don't know if that was Rick Carlisle or Luka necessarily, but I think that there was some stuff not necessarily related to on-court performance there, in addition to the injuries that led to Porzingis being traded away. And of course, obviously, they have no idea of knowing, you know, he's going to have this healthy season, all-star, whatever. But it shows how fragile all this stuff is. I mean, I think they're in a weird spot. You know, I think Luka has 2 years left on his deal after this one. I'll have to look into that. But, man, I don't know how they pull themselves out, Chris. I really don't, because you touched on this in your column. Like, we touched on this a little bit in previous shows, but I personally think they probably should not double down on Kyrie. But the problem when you say that is it puts them in such a bad spot. Like, can you find a sign and trade partner for him in the summer? That's probably their best bet. The real question I want to ask you is, how do you build a successful team around someone like Luka? Like, I'm trying to think, like, if you could drop him, let's say you could swap with him with any star in the league and give him their situation, who would that be? I think the best one I could come up with is actually the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, if you gave him Brook, Middleton, and Holiday, you gave him defenders, shooters, like, that would be a pretty sick team. But, you know, Giannis is someone.
But how do you get all that? Like, I mean, I think you're just saying for the sake of just like what would work, not necessarily just sake of argument, something like, that he like, can get.
Well, because first you have, yes, exactly. The thing is, first you have to figure out what actually works next to him.
What it looks like.
We don't know, because I'm not trying to denigrate their run to the conference finals. I don't know that what they did last year was like replicable or something you could truly build on. You mentioned Brunson. The Brunson thing is fascinating. Obviously, I think they should have retained him. At the same time, I don't think Brunson becomes the player he is now if he continues playing next to Luka. So
he doesn't.
So I mean, what are even the types of players, the archetypes? Like who even makes sense around Luka?
I mean, you need more defense than what you have. I understood why they got Hardaway in the first place, because that was part of the Porzingis trade when they made it. I don't think they need him on that roster. I think you would be much better served getting guys that can maybe create a little bit, and maybe some of the stuff he does off the bounce, but someone that is like as proficient as he is from three really defends. And the crazy part is, as we talk about that, I'm realizing that sounds a lot like Finney Smith. Finney Smith was not always the greatest about getting to the basket, though. Like, he was more of a strict 3-and-D guy. And they've had those players, you know, Josh Green has stepped it up a little bit this year to show that he can do more than just shoot. Even though he's been a much better shooter this year, he can defend a little bit. You need more guys like that. You know, this strikes me as the sort of team that, like, if you, and now it sounds silly, but like, if you could have had someone like a Mikal Bridges on this roster who gives you like a legitimate, you know, a legitimate option to go out and guard the LeBrons, the Giannises, the Bookers, those guys in the league, that goes a long way. He can, you know, he can do a little bit. He can run some pick and rolls for you. He can serve as a cutter. He gets you some movement in your offense without just having to be a guy that you stick in the corner. And that's what I worry about with this team is just, you know, there have been enough moments now where absolutely Luka and Kyrie get it going. But there have also been moments like that Charlotte game on Sunday. There are other three starters along with Luka and Kyrie. So I think that was Josh Green, Dwight Powell, and was it Hardaway or was it someone different? It was Bullock, I think. They went scoreless in the whole first half. Yeah. It was 21 points from Luka and 8 from Kyrie. And the rest of the group, I think, took 5 shots and went scoreless in the first half. You can't have that. And I don't even think you can blame the bench, because it's like if they're only getting 5 shots, what rhythm have they even had a chance to really develop? It starts to, you know, what this team reminds me of is like a younger and less accomplished version of Chris Paul and James Harden. With a group of people that they're playing with that are like role players for the most part. They get their shots when they get their shots. PJ Tucker's out there. Mm-hmm. Trevor Ariza's out there.
Eric Gordon. Yeah.
Eric Gordon, but they also can go really cold and miss 27 shots in a row because they don't know when they're getting the ball. Even the other scores that you've got that you could put out there at times, Christian Wood being an example, Jason Kidd hasn't really wanted to play him. And by the way, that's in a month where, and I wrote this in the newsletter as well, the last 2 months have been the lowest months he's had in minutes per game. The month of March has been the highest true shooting percentage the guy's had all season.
Christian Wood thing is wild. It's like that was their big offseason acquisition. And offensively, at least, they were fantastic with him. Mm-hmm. And Kidd keeps being like, we can't, Jason Kidd's not even sugarcoating it. He's like, we don't play defense. Which is more. It's like, buddy, you don't play defense. Like,
yeah.
I don't, JaVale's not playing. I get that Kleber's like, I think probably their third best player. I'm a big Maxi Kleber fan, but mm-hmm. like, just play Christian Wood at this point. Like, what have you got to lose?
Yeah. And, you know, shout out to Tim Cato. He wrote this piece, I think a couple weeks ago before they'd fallen in this, this four-game losing streak that they just snapped. He basically had like a remedy, like five things the Mavs should do. And, you know, like before the season gets away from them completely, one of the things he listed is like, either play Christian Wood or don't. Like, if you truly think that he is helpful for you, play him and give him longer minutes to see, basically like lean all the way into the offense, be a slightly watered down version of what the Kings are this year. Realize that you can't play defense and that's okay, but you're just going to try to storm teams by outscoring them every night. And you have the capability of doing that. You've got Kleber, who's, you know, a stretch big. You've got Wood, who's a stretch big. You've got Powell, who can rim run and is athletic enough to jump over people. You've got two of the best guards or ball handlers in the whole league. And then everybody else is essentially like a wing role player. You've got Jaden Hardy, who's going to shoot every time he touches the ball and have good nights with that sometimes.
Yo, Jaden Hardy can cook, though.
he can. And I mean, like, honestly, he helps them from the standpoint of like, why don't we at times just put the five best scorers we have out there?
You know,
like Kyrie, Luka, Christian Wood, Jaden Hardy, and, you know, give me a fifth guy, whoever.
Kleber, yeah.
I mean, like, just go for it. And like, it sounds silly, but if you're going to, you know, lose games by not having defense anyway, then try to outscore teams. And it does sound silly. It probably is silly, but you might as well try to score 140 points per 100 possessions and see where it takes you. Because like basically what Tim said in his column with that piece was like, it's not working to try to balance the offense and the defense anyway. So why don't you just lean all the way into one, like the way the Kings have done, and they have, and it's been successful for them. So,
Jaden Hardy's like that meme of Woody from Toy Story being like, pull up, let him cook. That's him.
I don't want to seem like I'm knocking him either, because like he's a rookie. Like, hell, Ben Mathurin is gonna get rookie of the year votes, and he. I was watching one of his games, and granted, he also scored a lot of points in it. That guy sometimes hardly ever passes the ball, and I mean, it's like he's a rookie that's expected. And frankly, that's why he's not out there for his defense. So until guys are really committing to that, like, you might as well just let him cook. And he has games where he's been a difference maker for them in that way. So I don't mind it. Part of me does feel like you might as well just go full scale offense, you know, instead of trying to thread the needle and fail at it anyway.
Also, a quick fact check of myself. I don't know where in the world I got the idea that Luka has 2 years left on his deal after this one. He signed through 27. He's in the first year of his extension. This lineup has played only 2 minutes together. Irving, Bullock, Wood, Kleber, Doncic. Now, granted, there's been some injuries, stuff like that, Woods, but I want to see that group. Like, F it, you know what I mean? Like, you got your one perimeter defender. Everyone else is a scorer. Kleber can switch a bit. You might as well switch with Wood and see what happens. Like, I'd give that group some more run. I wouldn't say I'm like, I feel bad for the Mavs, because at the end of the day, like, they should have never been in a position to draft Luka. It took some like all time historic stupidity from some other teams in the draft.
Right.
But it is like, when someone's good that quickly, it's a it can be a challenge to build around, even if they're on their rookie contract, because you have to scramble to find, you know, other good players. Do you have the assets? You weren't really prepared for this. And I thought they made a worthy gamble with the Porzingis trade. You know, that was someone who was a hot commodity. I mean, again, like, I think people forget the reaction of that trade at the time. It was, how could the Knicks give up on this guy? This is a massive blunder by this team. And, you know, once that went south, just doubling down with the Kyrie trade, I think, is going to be, not because Irving himself has been so bad, but getting rid of Dinwiddie and Finney-Smith, who I think in totality are more helpful for this team than Irving alone, but also robbing them of players who can be packaged in another trade. Like, you know, what if they had somehow been, you know, I don't think they would have been enough to trade for Durant, for example, but someone in between Durant and Irving, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. that next star, that might have been more helpful for them than Irving. Whenever I think about it, I'm just like, Luka's so exhilarating to watch, and he's obviously an unbelievable talent, but I don't think building around him is easy. And man, missing a playoffs entirely when it's not like he's been out of the lineup most of the season. Like, I think back to like Dwayne Wade in 2008, he had all these knee injuries. The team, they were playing like D League guys like Kasib Powell and Blake Ahern. Like, that season went off the rails quickly. That's not what this is. Like, they're trying, he's playing, they're just not good.
Yeah. I wonder too, like, you know, we talk about stars, and like, I know the response I've gotten most frequently on the column I wrote about Luka and Kyrie is like, focus on the rest of the roster. It's not those two that are the issue. Although I think, as I've told you, I think that they are a big part of the issue, is like, they're controlling the ball so much. Maybe it doesn't need to be a star, but I think mm-hmm. that there's more, they could find more balance too. I think as far as a guard, finding a guard that doesn't have to have the ball in his hands, that can play on the court with another ball dominant or like star level player. One of my favorite players in the league is and has been for a while, Tash Jones. Mm-hmm. Someone that, you know, because he's on the court to end games and finish games, because he's so sure-handed, that you can have him out there. He can knock down a shot. He can defend guards on the other end and take the point of attack aspect out of it for Luka or Kyrie, for that matter, whoever it would be. And in moments where people are going to miss a lot of time, which I would always have that concern about Luka, he's been healthy over the course of his career. He's played more than 60 games in every single season he's been in the league. This is now season 5 for him, for those of you that are wondering how old he is. You know, I think that that sort of player could actually make a big difference. And I think about that, the reason I even bring him up is because we're sitting here talking about second stars. Okay, Milwaukee wasn't getting a second star because they had Middleton already, but Jrue Holiday was, mm-hmm. you know, they traded for him and won a title immediately. And maybe would have won another had it not been for, you know, the Middleton injury and everything else. So getting a guard that can check off a number of boxes, someone that could shoot better than Eric Bledsoe, someone that can handle the ball when you need him to, someone that can defend, someone that is trustworthy enough to take the ball from this person and let him rest a little bit. You know, fundamentally that, you know, some of that is what Kyrie was being asked to do when yeah. LeBron was playing with them, is just to let LeBron rest a little bit from time to time. So I, you know, we'll see. I don't know what it looks like for them. I do think that there's something to be said for tweaking some of their rotation guys, and maybe that being more important than the second guy, but it does feel like they've misfired on who that second guy should be, at least in terms of the timing a couple times. The mm-hmm. Porzingis trade on his face to me made a lot of sense for them. Maybe they pulled the plug on it too early, which sounds, you know, I'm sure people would have been like, oh, you got to pull the plug on this, had they not done it. But I think the Kyrie thing is also, and we haven't said it, is also complicated by the fact of like, who wants to realistically give this guy a long deal right now,
right?
If they want to deal with him at all. And, you know, we haven't heard anything that suggested that he's been difficult to them or for them in Dallas, but it's just a question that's going to follow him around now at this point, given the way that things have ended with the last few stops he's been at.
They got to find a sucker for Kyrie in the summer. That's really, I think their best bet is, can they sign and trade him to some team that's convinced themselves that he's going to put them over the top. I want to talk about something that's of great personal interest to me, Chris.
Okay.
And that's Boston Celtics star Jaylen Brown.
Okay.
I don't know if you've been following.
I have.
The text in our group chat, but I'm getting a great deal of personal enjoyment of Jaylen Brown essentially going on a media tour to describe his experience playing in Boston with the New York Times. Then the call came from inside the house, inside the Boston Media Mafia church, Jaylen Brown in the ringer talking about some of his issues playing.
Shout out Logan Murdoch for that story.
Shout out to Logan. Fantastic story.
That was deep. Some of the stuff that Jaylen got into.
Yeah. I got a couple beers with our good friend Michael the Pod Pina the other day. Great to see the Pod, Mrs. Pod, Baby Pod. They're all doing well.
What's wrong
Pina,
with you, man?
Pina, understandably, not ready to talk Jaylen Brown fake trades yet. I asked him if the Celtics should attach one or two firsts when they trade him for Trae Young this summer. Mike was not amused. Chris, what do you make of the situation? It is a pretty interesting. This is a team that the Celtics have been great all season. They had a little bit of a slump here. They think they've regained their form. Jaylen had 41, was it, the other night? Then after the game, a reporter asked him about you know, how he felt about the warm fan reaction to his great game. And Jaylen Brown just said, "I'm focused on winning," in the most unemotional voice ever. I wouldn't say he's upset, but you know, it's not necessarily the kind of comments you want to see from, I think, a player who's integral to your title hopes. Something, nothing. What do you think? Because I'm getting a great deal of enjoyment tormenting Celtics fans, specifically one in particular, about Jaylen Brown.
Okay. So I think it's definitely possible to view it as something. Like, I think you'd have to cover your ears and your eyes to not see what he said. And though there are times I wish Jaylen Brown would have maybe spoken up a little bit more about things, namely some of the stuff as it related to the support that he was lending Kyrie Irving during some of that stuff. And, you know, some of the statements about or the tweet that he had or the retweet or whatever it was about the group of people that was standing outside, you know, basically denouncing Kyrie's suspension and everything and the misunderstanding of what group that was. So there's that. But that aside, and some stuff about, you know, clarification about how closely aligned he is with Kanye West and Ye's brand and everything with that, those are things that I think some people wanted him to speak up on more. Aside from those two things, which I understand that is a big aside, but meaning his own stuff, Jaylen Brown speaks pretty candidly.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows what he's saying. He knows how it's perceived, interpreted. The fact that he had two sit downs like that within a week come out in the media, the Times and then the Ringer, and that he's invoking some pretty big stuff as it relates to Boston's history with Black athletes. And in particular, specifically the sit down with Logan, I imagine was a sit down, a Black reporter who I think navigates this stuff well when he's talking to athletes. And I think it's part of why they seek to speak to him specifically. I don't think you could take that lightly. Also within that article, he was basically saying that he three-way called Tatum and Brad Stevens. Like, I don't think you can take that lightly when you're talking about the idea of him not trusting the organization. Yes, that happened a while ago. That was in the offseason. Yes, we're just now hearing about it, so we're going to make a bigger deal of it now. It's a massive deal. I mean, the guy has been an all-NBA level talent this season, arguably, for a team that, you know, if he's on the team, they have a shot at winning the title. If you trade him for parts, they may not be. That's just where we're at. And he's a young guy that is going into a contract situation very soon. He's very conscious of a lot of things. We've seen Boston athletes, maybe the best athlete they've ever had from the standpoint of Bill Russell, grin and bear it and just make the best of it and play out a whole career there. Guys make a lot more money now, man. Someone will pay Jaylen Brown. It doesn't have to be Boston. We're going to see what happens with that. But it was eye-opening to see what he said, how he said it. You know, he was asked a question. It was kind of a corny question, in my opinion, of like, how did that make you feel that the crowd is giving you the standing ovation? Like, and the idea of Boston, how you feel about it. That alone, you know, great. Like, I don't know if they wanted him to clap about it. He said how he felt. And I imagine that a standing ovation doesn't change that necessarily. I also imagine he doesn't want to litigate this every game by game basis of how he's received by the fans and what he says in the media. If you feel that, and you feel, he did not say this, but if you feel uncomfortable from a racial standpoint or like from a support standpoint, or that the fans have a certain toxicity to them clapping for you once isn't going to change that. Particularly if you feel like some of it is aimed at you as a black man. The same could be said of Donovan Mitchell in Utah and some of the stuff that he said after leaving Utah. So it's not like you just wash your hands of it with one moment. So we'll see. Like, I could imagine there are a lot of things that might change the way he feels about it. Maybe they win a title this year. But then again, we've seen that happen with Kawhi and Toronto. And so loyalties to cities, like, I don't think that extends as far as fans would like for it to. And we're absolutely going to see what happens with it. But I'm very intrigued. The timing of it was interesting. The playoffs are about to start. He knows all that. So it's very interesting to watch and to think about.
I just want to read some of my favorite parts from this story.
You're loving this. Goodness.
It goes, during the All-Star festivities, Tatum was never far from his son, Deuce, while Brown, forced to play in a mask after a recent facial fracture, keeps much of his life and family away from public view. Yeah, I think Jaylen Brown is also sick of Deuce Tatum. Is the vibe I got there?
Man.
I'm kidding. Logan, I'm sorry. I found that to be very funny. It's a lot of Deuce Tatum on these national broadcasts, man. it's a lot of Deuce Tatum on these national broadcasts.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting, man. He does not seem like someone who is thrilled. I do think the Celtics can put all this to rest if they offer him a Supermax extension, especially like you said, if he makes all NBA, he'll be eligible. Mm-hmm. I think there's no reason for Boston not to do it, but it becomes that situation where I believe if he makes all NBA, he'll be eligible for it this summer, the year before his last deal. If he turns it down, then that opens up a whole new can of worms. I think every other team that you talk about who would be an ideal second star for Luka Doncic, how about Jaylen Brown? I think there's every team in the league would be in on someone like that. And I'm very fascinated to watch. I'm just fascinated to watch Pina squirm. Honestly, he's trying to play it cool, like bringing up random stuff about the city of Boston, clearly just trying to prove to himself that it's going to be okay. But I found those comments personally very entertaining, especially after I interviewed Eric Spoelstra in the fall, and he said how it would be such an amazing opportunity to coach Bam for the next 20 years and turn him into the next Udonis Haslem, and Bam taking a selfie with Spo, UD, and Dwayne Wade. That's just called culture, Chris. That's what that is. Clearly, some organizations lack it. You know, some organizations are putting their players in trade rumors even after a finals run, and they've apparently lost trust in management. That's just, I guess, how they're doing things over there, but good luck to them. Okay, let's get back to Chris has not been responding in the group chat this entire time, as I've just been dropping in every Jaylen Brown quote.
I fundamentally don't mind where he plays, or I certainly don't care, like, in the way that Michael does, or even you might, but I'm definitely watching it with popcorn, because it's really interesting.
I will say, in all seriousness, it's I appreciate his candor. We should want that from all athletes.
Sure.
If I could be genuine for a second here, I do think Boston should offer him the Supermax. And I think, again, that would go a long way in just kind of easing whatever concerns he has. But it's the stuff that he's talked about, you know, forget about whatever his relationship with the Celtics is. He's talking about having difficulty buying a home in Boston. Talk about education inequality. Again, you mentioned there's some things, like, he, in both the stories, Jaylen Brown didn't comment on Kanye West. you know, he explained the Kyrie stuff a little bit in terms of the viewing it through a union vice president perspective that I thought was interesting. The things that he's willing to speak candidly and thoughtfully about are genuinely very interesting. So it's very cool whenever he speaks about that kind of stuff.
And he does. I mean, like I'm not about to call Jaylen Brown a disruptor, you know, because of how he thinks or how he acts, handles things. You know, it's been done with Kyrie. I think there's actually a legitimate, you know, debate that could be had about that if you want to use that phrasing for him the way that Woj did once. Jaylen Brown, though, like he, for some reason, he does strike me as the sort of person that, like, I know it's a lot of money. I know we're all kind of, most people are saying like he's not going to turn down a supermax. He's not going to leave it on the table. If they've smoothed over everything, I buy that. If there's still lingering stuff out there, if he doesn't have the greatest relationship with Tatum and he's hurt by the fact that there was a perception that they wanted to trade him, and you put that on top of the fact that like he's not fundamentally comfortable in Boston and doesn't like it there, I could see him, like, he's the sort of person with the sort of outside the box, just kind of the way he speaks and carries himself, I could see him doing something different. Again, I think it's a little too early to say that, but those were strong comments, and it's not just the strength of the comments, it's the timing of them, and also like him not giving an inch with regards to that question the other night about the standing ovation or whatever else he got. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see. And if they win a title, I imagine that even if that happens, even if he wants to leave, the conversation around that takes on a different leaning, because I think people will be like, okay, we got a title. We saw what the potential was, at least to win that one title. And now I imagine it pushes the stock even higher than it already is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of teams are going to want him. So Boston would get something good back for him. So we'll see. But I imagine that Boston fans are holding their breath a little bit. They'd like to keep him for as long as they can.
Yeah, I think Boston fans are going to love Trae Young. Anyway. Let's wrap up real quick with the team. We both talked about before we started, we watched the last couple games and have found them to be really entertaining. That's the Minnesota Timberwolves. Mm-hmm. Man, I thought the Wolves... I have this thing. So whenever I'm watching a team play Golden State, let's say a team you're rooting for is playing the Warriors. Personally, I'd rather have the team you're rooting for be trailing by 1 to 2 points the whole game as opposed to having an 8-point lead.
Right.
Because it just is extra demoralizing when Steph hits those back-to-back threes and the crowd is going nuts. And it's like, it's like the San Andreas meme. It's like, aw, bleep. Here we go again. And it's like, that's what it is playing the Warriors. It's like, Steph is a three, his mouth guard is out, Clay's holding the follow through. And it's like, bleep, here we go again. Like, classic Warriors run. And there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do. But if you're trailing the whole time, you know, it's like, keep fighting. We're hanging around. Maybe we could throw a big punch at the end. The Wolves are leading most of this game. The Warriors come back in the fourth. Minnesota comes up with some huge plays at the end, a Kyle Anderson steal, a Karl Anthony Towns just
pull up three in transition.
Transition three, like he's Kevin Durant, headed to Oakland, like he's Kevin Durant. Shout out to Gucci. That was a sick shot. Then they come back with a win over the Kings. Minnesota's in that weird play-in mix. You know, 7-10 in the West, that's so jumbled up. It feels like they could jump up to 6 or drop out at any moment. I think this team's interesting because they played, Cat missed 51 games or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a chunk of the season where they looked their best, frankly, without Towns. Edwards was playing with one big on the floor. Naz Reid was playing fantastic basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like maybe they found something. But now they've been playing good ball with Cat back. What do you make of the Wolves?
I mean, they're a team, and you and I were talking about this off air just a few minutes ago before we started the pod, I guess. They're a team that, you know, maybe the time without Towns was helpful in some ways.
Mm.
It allows Anthony Edwards to kind of just be like the number one guy, no questions asked. And even more so when you move Russell elsewhere. So there's that aspect of it. There is the fact that you uncomplicate the defense and kind of the role that you're playing between Gobert and Towns with the 4 and 5. Gobert just kind of gets to settle into a defense that looks more like the one he's always played in, to just anchor that, and it uncomplicates that part of it. There's the contributions they've gotten from Naz Reid all year, and certainly in big moments where he's just been great. There's times when they get crazy performances from Torian Prince to hit 8 threes in a game against the Knicks. There's just so much to this team that makes them really, really interesting. And there is a confidence that they have. The Kings, they win that game against the Kings last night. The Kings have been the most prolific offense in NBA history, just statistically speaking. Certainly this year, there's no question about that. They won 60% of their games. They're 45 and 30. They've had something like 5 games all year where they haven't gotten double-digit threes. Three of those games have been the Timberwolves defending them.
Wow.
So there's something to that as we talk about matchups, and as of right now, when we look at these matchups, if the season were to end today, the Timberwolves would have the Kings in the first round.
Mm.
So I saw for a little bit of time, you know, because I just wrote a feature story and went out to Sacramento for a few days. I follow a lot of Kings fans all of a sudden, and they're like, oh, crap. You know, watching that game, the Timberwolves have a bunch of the stuff that kind of feels like a little bit of Sacramento's kryptonite. And they're a team that is just, stuff is coming together at the right time. They're getting Towns back. They have a lot of firepower scoring wise. They've got all sorts of defense with McDaniels and Gobert. It's just
was fantastic in that Warriors game. And I feel bad for Gobert because he doesn't get credit anymore for the nights he's fantastic defensively. He was so good in that game defensively. You know, the Warriors, they put up some points on the fourth, but that was a low scoring game, especially by today's NBA standards.
It was.
And yeah, he was fantastic. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I had to bring that up because I feel like no one ever talks about when Gobert is good anymore, but I thought he was really good in that game.
No, I mean, it's fair. I mean, I think, you know, he's been in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation so many times now that's like, it's kind of expected for him to do that. And also the start they got out to was slow. So it's kind of like, you know, it was expected for him to be better. So now that he's doing it, you don't want to give him too much credit for it, but it's been a big part of their story of how they've stayed afloat. I feel like there've been a couple teams that we were prepared to kind of, you know, give death knells to, or, you know, kind of say that this is their death knell. The Bulls had that stretch even right after the All-Star break where it looked like, you know,
everyone was writing their break up the Bulls stories.
Yeah, Pina might have been the first one in the league to write something about the Bulls and like, this is the most depressing team in the league. They've looked a lot better as of late. Yeah. We were talking about them off air. The Timberwolves, everybody had an opinion about, just because even when Towns was healthy, it just didn't look right. They didn't look special. And it was kind of like, this is what you traded all those picks for, the Walker Kessler stuff. Look, I don't know what I expect of them, but it's possible. I think that the Kings can and probably will win their first round series. I'm at that point where I'm willing to say that. Mm-hmm. That said, there are matchups for them that like don't look as favorable.
And Wolves, I think Kings would be really interesting, brother.
It would be a fascinating series. Yeah. And a lot of the same way that the Timberwolves Grizzlies series last year was interesting, where it's like there's just a lot of athleticism there. There's a lot of firepower offensively. There's a lot of defense on the Minnesota side that makes that. Like, I don't think that the Kings want to go into that series feeling like they can't defensive rebound against them and can't get off as many threes as they want to, or knock down as many as they want to, because that's kind of their, you know, that's a recipe to beat them, obviously. Mm-hmm. And now we've seen it happen a few times with Timberwolves, so we'll see.
I know I've been a little bit maybe lower on Memphis, and Memphis has been fantastic lately. They've been really good. But I do think a Timberwolves-Grizzlies rematch would be a lot of fun to watch. Mike Conley's just been so solid for the Wolves. Kyle Anderson. So they got this lineup. They got this lineup. Conley, Gobert, Anderson, Edwards, Jaden McDaniels. McDaniels is also, I think, something that's difficult to take into account sometimes. Like, McDaniels has gotten so much better as the season has gone along. And that can be kind of hard to factor into a team's development. Like, he's been so good. That lineup is already the third most used lineup. Like, they've been just spamming the hell out of it.
Wow.
222 minutes and only 14 games. 10.4 net rating. That's a really good group. Just really solid on both ends of the floor. It's just going to be... I'm with you. Like, you know, this team had a certain book written about them and the narrative is changing. But... like I just mentioned, that lineup is so good. Like, where do you work Towns in? You know, because I want Edwards on the floor. I guess you're choosing between McDaniels
and Anderson. Are you going full
Jay
Williams on me here?
I'm not.
Where he says Austin Reeves and hey, how man, can you bring back LeBron?
Well, that's you have to bring him back off the bench and they lost. That's what happened.
Yeah.
He messed up Austin Reeves' flow. Yeah. No, it's to me. It's more. I think you're going to make a choice between McDaniels and Anderson, who are both really good players. Like Kyle Anderson is such a solid bet. But I just, man, Towns and Gobert together in a playoff series, I'm still, especially like Naz Reid has been fantastic.
I know. I mean, I saw people from, you know, again, the Kings universe is being like, oh, how? And even people that aren't like, how is this a third big off the bench? And, you know, he didn't have to be when Towns wasn't there. I mean, now this is starting to sound like, yo, how do you bring back LeBron? But but I mean, there's something to be said.
Well,
about
it's the fit concern was already there is the problem. Then we saw them play bad and then play good without him.
Right. So it'll be interesting to watch. I mean, it is a time where let's also be real in saying that like Karl Anthony Towns, even in big playoff situations last year, had really bad foul trouble. So, you know, having him back is better than not having him back. I think everyone would agree with that, at least for the possibilities that that presents. Certainly from an offensive perspective, when it gets harder to score in the playoffs, you also may need someone else to play because he's going to get overly excited or just generate too many fouls. And if he does that, at least you've got two bigs that can play in his spot. We'll see what happens. Like, I think that the matchups in the West are probably the thing that I'm most intrigued by at this point.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that some of that is true in the East too, but I just think the West is like, you literally could have title contenders playing against the Kings in the first round. And the Kings have been, I think the Kings are as good as their record is. Like, I think they're legitimately like as good as a three seed normally would be. It's just an experience thing. And it's just that they're so top heavy from an offensive perspective. You're used to seeing teams that good be really good on defense. Like, having net ratings that good, they're normally good on defense and they're not. So, they still have a historically dominant offense. So like, who's going to stop that? What does that look like? We also have seen, and I've been saying this, that my biggest concern for the Kings is not even their defense. It's not even the inexperience. It's Sabonis and his foul trouble. When he's not able to stay on the floor. Last night, they were playing Alex Lynn. And I saw people asking, like, why is Alex Lynn playing? I get the impression Mike Brown is searching. Like, I don't know if Metu was maybe hurt or banged up, if he just wants a different look. You're not really losing anything. It would have been a chance to clinch at home, and I think that would have meant something to the fans, because now they're likely almost certain to get their playoff spot by some other team doing it, so the home fans won't get to enjoy it, in person. But Sabonis, like, him getting hurt, him getting in foul trouble, they just have so little behind him aside from Trey Lyles, who's really not a center, and their whole offensive system is based on what Sabonis is able to do through screening and handoffs, dribble handoffs. So that's what I worry about. But because of that, it opens a massive door for whoever lands in what looks like it will be six now, the sixth spot, because the Kings, I don't think they're going to catch Memphis. Memphis has been red hot, even with the jaw stuff swirling, even without Steven Adams there. So who knows? It'll be fascinating to watch. But the middle of the conference from three to six, because of the Kings drawing whoever they're going to draw, is going to be fascinating to me.
Yeah, I want the Kings to be great. I think it's such a fun story. I love their fans. I love the Beam. I'm nervous for them. If Golden State,
I think they're nervous
in the
for them
spot,
too.
Yeah.
They are.
If Golden State ends up in the sixth seed, it's going to be fascinating. Also, I bet Pina on Sunday that the Lakers would finish top five in the West because LeBron was coming back. And they were
you did
out.
What?
I was feeling frisky.
Let's see. But I mean, it's a 2.5 game difference. How many games left are there? Like seven?
Well, so I was like, Durant's out, Paul George is out. The Wolves, like Towns is going to take some time. Golden State can't win on the road. Of course, immediately they lay a massive egg at home.
Yeah, two and a half games is a lot to overcome. Yeah. Right? Maybe it was two games at the time, but that's a lot of space to overcome with just seven games left. So we'll see.
Not even the LeBron James defeat can save them.
That was I saw that. I was like, click, because I was like, what is this? Like, I immediately thought of Rex Ryan and just like, man, that's probably his Wonderland to think of the LeBron James defeat. But that quote could have gone over much better than it did. I was like, what is this? Yeah. What are we talking about here? But it was not about a foot fetish. Beware. Don't beware. No need to beware.
Before we go, I'm going to put producer Shelby on the spot. Shelby, do you have any thoughts whatsoever on the Blazers shutting down Damian Lillard and apparently going into the tank?
To me, it all points towards the strategy that we're definitely going to get the number one pick and draft Wembanyama. Unfortunately, it looks like Nurkic and Simons might be traded. What do you think about that?
I think they probably need to with Nurkic at this point. I love him. Yeah. Like, he's been good for them. I thought that they
talk about foul trouble. I think
CJ, like, God bless them, they overstayed their welcome. Yeah. Just as far as, like, I think I had that stat at one point that I pulled up that there had only been like four NBA duos to be together that long, or I'm sorry, trios to be together on the same team that long without ever getting to the finals. Or not even that. There had only been like four to be together that long, period, I think.
And they were the only one that did the finals.
They were the only one that hadn't made the finals. It was like Clay and Steph and Draymond. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's a big difference between those things. I probably would have sought to have moved Nurk before CJ, although I think they needed to move CJ as well. So I think they need to do that with him. Their defense just has not been good enough.
They play less defense than the Mavericks.
Here's why I would trade both of them, even though I think Simons is a good player. You know, Herring mentioned it with Nurk, who I think also limits their defensive coverages to a bit. Simons, I mean, first of all, I think Shaedon Sharpe has already shown he deserves a ton of minutes.
Throw him in the fire.
Are you going to play Sharpe, Simons, and Lillard moving together moving forward? I think Simons, again, he's a very talented player, but to an extent, it's like a redux of what the Lillard-McCollum situation already was. So, and I will say, if there's a star in this league that deserves a frozen envelope, magical ping pong ball rigging of the lottery, getting Dame Wembanyama would be pretty fun. Would be a good development for Dame. Portland's a great basketball city, you know, especially after what happened with Greg Oden. I think they could use some good basketball karma and, like, let's send the Wemby to Portland vibes, you know?
Yeah, that'd be pretty dope. I mean, I'm honestly, I don't know what it is with me lately. I feel like I'm just like good vibes only Chris lately, you know, but like, I am happy preemptively for whoever is going to get them for the most part. I don't know if there's going to be a team that, you know, does something really shady or that a team that has already won two or three times in the last few years or something. But all these teams, for the most part, because the odds have flattened out, because the play-in exists, all these teams are more or less like trying for the most part. There are some that really aren't, but there are other ones, like even the Pistons. Okay. Cade has been out legitimately for, he had surgery. I think that they would be like a wonderful fit for someone like that.
Do you think they should start him over Bagley?
Yeah.
I can't with that question. But whether it's them, like Charlotte obviously is just brutal. And they've had injuries too. And also they're winning lately, like relative to what they were doing. They're still playing hard. So as opposed to the last few years where there were so many instances where there are teams that are just trying their damnedest to lose, most of these teams are still actively trying to win. I did see Utah roll out some, you know, some lineups lately where I was kind of like,
Utah deserves to go play some bad lineups, man. Utah gave it a way longer fight than anyone thought they
would. They did, but part of me is like, well, because y'all gave it that long, you know, like, and because you're still right there. Now, granted, they're I don't think they're going to do it now, but like, maybe it's time. But I don't know. For the most part, it's been such a fun year from the standpoint. Oklahoma City is still being in the race as well. Whoever gets the number one pick, I'm going to be happy for. I guess even though Portland at this point, you know, by letting Dame just sit out, would essentially be pulling the plug, I couldn't help but be happy for Dame if they landed him, because it's like the patience that he's showing. He's not just going with the flow of like everybody wants him to go find a team to link up with. It would be really awesome to see him get a star of that caliber.
Mm-hmm.
This would be as close to a Tim Duncan, David Robinson sort of moment as we've had probably really. And, you know, since that happened, of just like an all-time great player who didn't have enough to get there. And all of a sudden you throw someone in his lap and it's like, you know, within a year or two, maybe he could.
It could be, I think, a Brandon Oden when Brandon Roy situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also just the bad luck the organization has had. It would be cool to see it
happen. I have an idea, though. did you see who was in on the mascot, like the beam initiation recently?
No. I'm so nervous about where this is going.
All the mascots went to Sacramento like a couple days ago, and their lion mascot, like they did like a religious ceremony where they all marched onto the court in like a light the beam initiation.
Okay.
Blaze was there.
The okay.
Mascot.
Uh huh.
They take that good luck he got from that, and they have him be their representative at the ping pong ball.
Hey, some team's got to put a mascot up there and just admit how ridiculous this whole thing is. I am for that. I do support,
including the Spurs, who have the methed out looking coyote or whatever it is, with the eyes that literally look like hypnosis devices, like it, you know. It's like, so
we'll have to do the mascots we trust the least on an episode. But I think that will do it for today's episode. Shout out to Chris Herring, shout out to Shelby. We will be back later this week. Until then, everyone, please continue to enjoy the NBA season.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.